Hello and welcome to AMO Kenzoku. We are a group of four Bubblegum Crisis Boomer Otaku who wanted an excuse to talk about anime, manga, and any other related subjects we find interesting. The Kenzoku are...
Hey y'all, I'm Mike.
Hi, I'm Dylan.
Hello, I'm Nick.
And I'm Sam. We are recording this episode on the 2nd of January, 2025, our first episode of the new year. Happy New Year to everyone.
Shingaki omedeto, where was it? No. That's new school. It's new school semester.
It's akemashite omedeto.
Akemashite omedeto. Yeah. There we go.
I like Shingaki omedeto.
Yeah, although we'll just that's topical for the episode.
Yeah, it's true.
My Japanese is so skewed by the influences that I've had of watching things, such that in my head I'm just like, yeah, Shingaki omedeto. Of course that's what you say in the new year.
That's what I say when I get up in the morning.
Yeah.
So this time we're discussing the animated film Look Back, and I'll just start out saying we are going to spoil the heck out of this. It's on Amazon Prime right now. You can stream it. It's pretty short. It's only like 45 minutes, I think.
58.
58? Okay.
Yep. Just about an hour.
And it will be an Amazon exclusive thing because it was Amazon was a production, producer for the whole film and everything. So that's where it's going to live.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Mm. Well, at least it's accessible. And so that's good. It's too bad it's one of the worst streaming services. Go watch it, then come back and listen to this, us talk about this thing. So what is Look Back? Look Back, as you know, since you went and watched it and came back, is an animated film based on a short one-volume manga by Tatsuki Fujimoto, who's the creator of Chainsaw Man, or, you know, the mangaka for Chainsaw Man. It was originally published in Shonen Jump Plus, starting in July 2021. And it was, I believe, simul-published in English at the same time in the weird Jump Plus app as well. The film came out in June 2024, so this year in Japan. And it released in the U.S. in theaters in October by G-Kids. And, G-Kids, they started a long time ago having a pretty bad reputation, but these days, I think they do a pretty good job with anime.
Yeah, and they put out good things, and they get them out to a wide enough audience, and I don't think they screw them out. I mean, I think what they started out as a different, like, I forget where they started. Was it part of Dragon Ball, or was it something else? I don't remember.
I'm not sure.
Because, I mean, Funimation was Dragon Ball.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike, do you know?
Are you thinking of 4Kids or...
Oh, gosh.
Oh, maybe 4Kids.
Yeah, that's. I think that sounds more like 4Kids.
Well, okay, so maybe G-Kids has always been good. Maybe G-Kids was 4Kids? I don't know. We should look into that. But anyways, they do a pretty good job these days, regardless of whatever they did in the past.
Better than Disney for the Ghibli stuff, which is one reason they got it.
Yeah, they're keeping it in theaters too. Like in my local theater, I think a lot of theaters have been showing Ghibli stuff basically nonstop all year from G Kids, which is awesome.
Based on Wikipedia, they were founded in 2008 by a guy named Eric Beckman, who previously co-founded the New York International Children's Film Festival.
Oh, okay.
So, sounds like the pedigree is focused on, I would say, things more leaning towards animation. So, that could explain why they find the good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Probably it has an appreciation for anime instead of just money, which is good. I'm assuming. So, this movie, it actually went really quickly to Amazon Prime. So, it came to the theaters in October. And then, like, a month later, it was on Amazon Prime, which, as was mentioned earlier, if it's co-pro with Amazon, then it makes sense that it's going to get there pretty quick. It was directed, and The screenplay was written by Kiyotaka Oshiyama. He also was the animation director, and this was his directorial debut. He's done a lot of, this is based on ANN, but he's done a lot of, like, he's directed episodes here and there. He's been animation director on various episodes and things. But, like, this seems like the first time he got the helm something himself and did a really good job with this. I love what he did. So I saw this in the theater when it came out, and then I bullied all you guys into seeing it on Amazon. What did you guys think of the, like, before we get into what it's about, how well did Amazon do with it? Was it pretty good?
I thought it was pretty good, with the exception of Amazon really preferring to put stuff in English by default, and you really have to force it to get into Japanese. But aside from that, it is dubbed and subtitled in like 10 or 15 languages or something like that. So, wow. You know, I say, like, hey, you know, they have that there. Even with the annoying Amazon ads, when, at least when I went to do it, it was like a 30-second ad before and then nothing in the middle of the film.
Yep. My experience as well.
And as far as streaming quality and everything there, like, it looked to me, having not seen it from like a 4K source or one of those things like that, it looked really nice. I didn't notice a bunch of, you know, like, bad aliasing or stuff, but others could have a different opinion.
Yeah, pretty much the only annoyance I remember was the, you know, Prime Video subtitles looking more like traditional closed captions rather than proper subs.
Yeah.
Yeah, the I don't...
ads... Go ahead.
Oh, I was about to say, I don't watch a lot on Amazon Prime because typically I try to find alternative sources. As you said, I think it's got a terrible UI, and generally I don't have good experience with it. But seeing as it's the only place to see it, quality-wise, I didn't have any concerns. I didn't see any weird compression artifacts or anything. And since it was co-produced by them, I guess I'm assuming it's getting, you know, preferable bandwidth, so to speak. And I think that's also explained by, like, as Dylan said, its availability in like 5 different languages right off the top. So,
yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, the ads is actually something that I was worried about, because, you know, the few things that I do watch on Prime suck because it just ads right in the middle of the thing. Even when there's like, sometimes they'll time it for an eye catch, sometimes they'll just put it somewhere, and it's really annoying.
You know, let the AI decide when the ad goes in.
Yeah. So you're saying it was like before the
movie started? Yeah, it was before the movie started. At least the way I did it, it said like, hey, your movie will then continue uninterrupted. And it did, which is like, okay, you know what? That's fine. I'd rather have that than a million things in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, because I can handle the ads like at an eye catch in a TV anime. It's not terrible, but yeah, for a movie, that's gross. Nick, were you going to say something?
One thing I noticed right away, and I'm sure you're going to address it, but I, up until now, know and still know very little about Studio Durian. So, because I thought that was an unusual insertion, because I was like, Studio Durian, is this some sort of hodgepodge of, like, industry veterans? And I took a look, and as far as I can tell, they primarily do commercials.
Huh. I actually didn't look into them at all.
Yeah, really? Like, I'm looking, out again, ANN, so... take it as you will, but I'm seeing a few credits here and there. One of them is a web commercial for a cosmetics company, Evangelion crossover collaboration.
Okay.
So, you know, take that as you will, but otherwise, another thing I'm seeing I've never heard of before is something called Shishigari, which I don't even know when that was released. I'm trying to look it up right now as I ask. But yeah, in any case, a studio that has not done much, but I must say I was very impressed with the final product.
I have to say, Durian's an interesting name choice. Isn't that the one that smells like death but tastes delicious?
Well, so, I mean, not to get all scientific, but the smell can be very off-putting, and the issue people have with it is either the taste or the texture, because the texture is very fleshy, like in like a meat sort of way, which is odd for a fruit. It's also a huge spiky football shaped, you know, fruit, so it's already kind of menacing looking. And mm-hmm. it's banned in many Southeast Asian hotels because of its odor.
But it now has a very positive connotation from Zelda Breath of the Wild, because it's like the best thing that you can eat in the entire game.
Really?
Yeah, it's like super overpowered, such that I think they took it out of Tears of the Kingdom.
I'm looking at ANN for Studio Durian, and I wonder if this is just one of those like personal studios, you know, like
I think it is. That's the impression I get, is that it is Oshiyama's studio. Yeah.
Yeah, that would definitely track.
So, this guy. When I saw it in the theater, one of the things that they showed was after it. I assume just to fill it because it was short. They showed interviews with VAs and the director, and they're kind of spliced together, like they took continuous interviews with them and like kind of cut them up thematically to arrange them. It was pretty interesting. And you guys said that they didn't have this in the Amazon version.
No.
Correct.
Yeah. It's a shame. I hope it gets put somewhere that people can see this.
I saw a little of it from the director on YouTube. I think I got cut off by something, but I think at least some of it's available somewhere. I have to double check where I found that.
Oh, okay. Well, if that's, we'll have to look that up and put in the notes if it's available on YouTube, because I highly recommend it. The VA, I don't really care much for VA interviews because I feel like there's not, unless you're talking to a VA about like their history and, you know, work, it's talking about their, what they did in a particular thing is usually not that interesting to me. But the director was really interesting because he got into like a lot of stuff about his philosophy about things, how he connected with the manga and all this stuff. And one of the things that I thought was interesting was when there are parts in the movie you may have noticed where it almost looks like there are animation errors. Did you guys see any of that?
Yeah, I noticed mm-hmm. it specifically in like in cuts where Fujino's like dragging Kyoyama's arm, and like I'm looking at her arm, and I'm seeing like a lot of like all like every, you know, I don't know, X frames, like her arm like gets you see a lot of like draft like sketch lines appear on it, and mm-hmm. then they disappear. So
in the opening like scene as well, where it does that zoom in on the building, and you see like all of the extra like sketch lines and stuff kind of going in and out of the corners. Like the very opening scene.
Yeah, from what I said, he said that was intentional, and it was, you know, showing you that a human had done the process, because an AI wouldn't need to do that.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. That to me was, like, the most interesting thing about it, because I saw those, like, you know, quote-unquote mistakes, and was like, well, that's interesting, there's a mistake in here. And then to hear him say, that, like, oh, no, I left that in on purpose, yeah, it's like a, human was here kind of a thing,
effect for me. I definitely kind of got big nostalgic 90s vibes from this,
and it also didn't I don't feel like it took me out, since the whole thing was about like not creating an anime but creating manga and stuff, and like so much of like the sketch work and these girls that, you know, grow up and you see their art evolve in the middle of this thing. So it kind of felt mm-hmm. very authentic to the characters and the story and how things were done there.
It gave it kind of a rougher look that I remember also from like the Xerox area 70s through 9 or through Little Mermaid Disney stuff too, before they went all digital.
Oh.
And I also liked how this plot wise it really hit home on the just how much absolute grinding labor making even a one shot can be, because I want to say between when I think it's inferred that they started working together in middle school, and all the way through middle school and through high school, they work together. And in those, let's say, what, that's going to be 7-8 years, they've released basically 7 one-shots. And they were all, I would say, critically acclaimed, but like that's basically what they were releasing, one a year, you know, going to school. Yeah. And then, well, I mean, only one of them was going to school, right? And then...
Wouldn't it be 6 years? Because isn't
3 and 3? Yeah, you're right. 3 and 3. So yeah, 6 years, 7. So yeah, a little bit more than 1 a year. But you know, one was basically working on it full time, and the other was doing it while going to school. And you know, they finally assembled something they felt comfortable enough to, you know, try to publish, and they got the offer for it, obviously. But yeah, I think that's a really good. Like, I mean, the only other, you know, property that I would say gave the real context of manga is Bakuman, which was a manga literally about manga. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's super meta. But I think that one still glorified it a bit, like romanticized it a bit more. Where Lookback definitely kind of gave a more, I would say, grounded kind of tone to it.
Coming through in that too, because I watched it yesterday. I actually watched it with my wife because it wasn't super long, so I was able to convince her to do that. and then I read the whole manga today, which just for reference, the Fujimoto stuff is available included if you have a Shonen Jump subscription. So if you want to read Goodbye Eri, which I haven't read yet, or Look Back, they are included in Shonen Jump, but if you're on Viz Manga, they are not included in that subscription, but you can buy the volumes there for like $10 a piece. So, just random aside there.
Oh, okay.
And the manga was cool, and it was one of those things where when I watched the movie, I didn't quite put together. I was like, I know this name Fujimoto Tatsuki, but I just like my head didn't go to Chainsaw Man. But even watching it, I'm like, this has some very kind of like Chainsaw-y kind of feels to it, but obviously it's not Chainsaw Man. And then I think Sam had mentioned, I was like, oh, Chainsaw Man, that totally makes sense. And the point I was trying to come around to in the long way there was kind of the opening segment in the movie where it shows Fujino working for hours and hours and days on her Yonkoma, which is incredible. Oh my god, it's so good. But in the manga, I feel like it does a lot better of a feel of that in the anime, where it gives a little bit more time, such that when she throws off her super smug, oh, I just drew this in 5 minutes thing, you're like, you're a freaking liar.
You're saying the anime did that better or the manga?
Yeah, I think the anime did that better. In the manga, there's like one shot of her kind of sitting and drawing, whereas in the anime, there was a lot more time was given to that in kind of the startup of the film, such that you really see, you're like, oh, she's a big... kind of a pompous, self-important liar, which, you know, she's also a fourth grader there who's been told she's great, and like, that's fine. I'm not trying to like cast aspersions on her. Like, I know plenty of kids that are jerks that way. Yeah, it's fine.
Except it turns out she ends up that way as an adult as well.
Right, some personality traits come
through. a very Fujimoto character, like. I just the way how her smug attitude and just kind of like how whimsical she is about like, well, I as soon as she saw, you know, at the end of her elementary school, she saw she did her last Yonkoma after seeing, you know, Kiyomoto's, you know, submission. She's like, well, I guess I'm just giving this up because this ain't worth it. Just like that, you know, just dropping it like a sack of potatoes just on the spot. He's like, this is way too much work. I'm done. I'm like, yeah, it's a very, I don't know. It feels like a very Fujimoto character. I see a lot of similar DNA between, you know, I don't know if this is how Fujimoto like perceives himself, because you know, it's pretty clear to me that this is meant to be quasi autobiographical. It's not one to one because it does mix in, you know, other other things. Like, I don't know. I don't know if we... I mean, we're going to get to it, but I have a strong suspicion that the, you know, like, was it 2018 now? Whenever it happened with the Kiwani, you know, attack, was, in my opinion, like, a pretty significant influence on part of this, you know, this eyepiece. And I think it was integrated, like, really well.
Yeah.
And I guess it caused a bit of controversy when it originally was published, from what I was reading, because because, you know, it was inferred that the attacker in Look Back was, you know, a mentally ill person, and that kind of, you know, it's stigmatizing, like, mentally ill people as being prone to, you know, being mass murderers, and that kind of didn't sit well with certain people in Japan, which I can get. So I think they kind of repurposed it to be a little bit more, you know, I guess more similar to the Kiwani thing. The Kiwani guy said the same thing. Like, you guys stole my work, and I'm gonna, you know, you're gonna pay. And this guy was saying the same thing. Like, somebody saw my thing on the net, and they copied it. So,
which anybody who rolls in those, like, creator circles or any of those, like, that's a, that goes around all the time, where somebody will have, like, an idea, just an idea, and it's not even, like, really unique. It's just a dumb thing. They're like, oh, they stole it, right? Like, that happens to the Wachowski sisters, like, have been battling somebody who's been saying, accusing them of that for, like, forever, I think.
Oh, like, yeah, with the Matrix, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
The Kiwani attack wasn't something I... Because I think I was very much out of, I think I was pretty kind of out of anime stuff at that time, or I wasn't really aware of the thing. So it wasn't something I was thinking about. But it definitely could have been, yeah, because it happened a couple of years before this was written and released. I definitely did notice the manga had more of the, I'm trying not to use wrong terms, but I'll use them non-scientifically and say kind of psychotic stuff or a psychotic break or something like that. Whereas in the anime, it goes definitely, it plays that down, just goes more to like, hey, you guys are like, the guy is clearly not right, but it does not play that up as much, which I think is probably better too. I think it was a stronger choice.
Yeah. I mean, that seems to be a, like, it's not, it is uncommon, I guess, but I will say it is not unheard of, right, for students in college in a very high-pressure environment, right, a very competitive environment in some cases, to just break down, right, in different ways. And so that's kind of like a, that seemed like a very kind of realistic thing. It wasn't played for comedy. It felt very, like, frightening, right? Like, this guy's having trouble. And
well, what's interesting was going to your point about it, you know, it wasn't funny, except like in the, I don't know, the last whatever 10 minutes where it's starting to do the alternative future thing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was like a really intense scene, don't get me wrong. I was just like, oh, are they going to show this? Because I don't want to see this. And then you see her freaking in the jogging suit, freaking karate kick the guy in like this super comical, you know, very, again, Chainsaw Man style kind of goofy way. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. And then, you know, she was like, yeah, I was just practicing martial arts next door. I saw this weirdo with a pickaxe, so I went and stopped him. And then I fell and broke my leg. Ha, ha, ha. And I was like, okay, interesting. And then, it's, you know, again, obviously, like,
still herself, right? That kind of braggart of, like, I'm casually great kind of thing. Like,
yeah, again, just a very, feels like a very Fujimoto, like, main character. Just, like, unlikable, but you still want to root for them. Which is a great skill to have, honestly. Like, I can't think of another, you know, MC in a major franchise where I'm like, man, like, I would despise Denji as a real person, but seeing him as the MC in this, you know, wild ride, it still makes me want to root for him in some bizarro world. And same in Look Back, right? Like, at first I was kind of like, you know, Fujino's doing this for the wrong reason. Like, she wants to rake manga because she wants to prove that she's better than this other person arbitrarily, and then the cool thing of, you know, ends up forming this, you know, inseparable bond between the two of very different people, and like, she actually, you know, broke Kiyomoto out of her shell and is the one ultimately that inspired her to go to art school, right? Because she, you know, Kiyomoto started to feel like she was falling behind and becoming the anchor of the pair. And, you know, that was a cool kind of... It's such an interesting concept because, like, you know, it's all in your head, right? Like, what... When you think about the two Yonkomas, like, back in school, like, you know, objectively speaking, was, you know, Kiyomoto's art higher quality? I think a lot of people would say yes, but everything was background. So that's, like, the one thing that I noticed where I was like, oh, there's no characters in hers. It's all
There's no comic there.
Exactly. It's just art. And that's fine, but, you know... Fujino was actually trying to leverage the medium of Yonkoma to get a response. And that first one she did where the husband and wife end up in that box center, and then she comes back as a medium. I'm like, dang, that's genius. Yeah. I was like, man, that's so clever. And I'm willing to bet this is something that Fujimoto actually made in, like, elementary school. I'm willing to bet that it probably happened because it seems so specific. It's so out there. And I would assume that it was something they actually did. And it goes to show, like, the different talents, right, the two had. Like, Fujino had the vision of, like, you know, comic delivery and, you know, worked on the characters, right? Studying anatomy, like, drawing, was really good at drawing anatomy because that's what she studied for, you know, all of elementary school. And it's very, you know, apparent in the way, her final product.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That, and having that Yonkoma be animated in the movie, just as it was drawn, was just so great. Brilliant. Such a wonderful choice.
It gave me big Masaru-san like feels.
Well, like, and the drawing style was just so fabulous.
Good, bad,
through it did a great thing in anime, which is it took this little Yonkoma and it made it out into a longer thing, but not too long. It still was. You know, it was concise.
And you want real deep cuts? The husband and wife of the Yonkoma were voiced by Toshiyuki Morikawa and Maya Sakamoto.
Oh, yeah, I saw like, that.
The two biggest names in the entirety of the cast by a huge margin, and they were just in it for that one little gag thing. And I'm sure it was pitched to them. They're like, oh, this is hilarious. Let's do it. So, you know, they probably got it done in an afternoon, but I thought that was great.
But I thought it was... It was like the way that the characters were drawn and animated there. You're like, oh yeah, that's totally how like fourth graders draw that are good at drawing, draw characters. They all kind of look like a weird screwed up version of Sailor Moon. Like they end up with that kind of like,
and very flat, right? Like they looked very 2D, and that's totally normal because that's what fourth graders can do. They're still haven't really had formal training. So,
but the fact that they were able to, like, say, kind of Masaru's on it, but draw it in the anime and have the drawing in there, and then even as well, because I was rewatching it, and the Kyomoto's background stuff, like the first one that really gets
Fujino's the character.
It really gets Fujino going crazy. Like you look at it, you're like, it's good, but it still is like, it's not it. The second one that you see from Kiyomoto is so much better. And it's like, that's so hard to, it takes so much work, being that I'm definitely I'm a super professional and in the animation industry, so I know this, but like, it's got to be so much work to try and draw consistently with stuff, but have it also be in like these different year stages of drawing and have it fit within the anime world. And
oh yeah,
like and talking take the from there
production of the anime,
right? Yeah, and like just doing all of that.
Yeah, that kind of like drawing poorly is its own skill. Like drawing poorly on purpose is a skill.
Right.
I mean, yeah, Usta Kyosuke like mastered that.
Yeah.
Right.
Like a good singer convincingly trying to convince you they can't sing is also difficult.
Yes. Right.
Or where you have someone who's a good singer in a movie or something, like learning how to sing in the movie, so they have to kind of like sing poorly and then get to singing better over their singing montage, and finally after that they're like, oh gosh, what was the hardest part of the movie? They're like singing really well. They're like, oh gosh, it was the first part where I had to like try to not sing exactly right but also not be horrible. But it's the same thing there.
There are so many times where you can look at stuff that's like drawn poorly and you'd be like, okay, I know this is supposed to look poor, but like I can see an incredible understanding of anatomy in this quote unquote poor drawing, right? Like, and this, you know, this movie, this, I didn't read the manga, but I assume it's pretty true to it. Like it very much looks like something that, you know, a kid would draw, and it's got that kind of poor understanding of like perspective and anatomy and mm-hmm. all these things. It's just, yep.
Yeah, the story is the movie is a great anime version of the manga, because in reading the manga after watching the movie, they're both great in their own way. The manga has the thing that the mangaka name space
Fujimoto
does so well, which is to draw these. It's so hard to describe. I had some words for it earlier. It was kind of these, I'm not having exactly the right words, but almost like these audaciously fragile characters where they're so full of themselves and so boastful, and you see like, but they're just these shells of people where you touch them and they crumble. They're You know, there's a good reason why Fujimoto is an incredibly popular manga artist, and I think so much of it comes down to this, just the character art is so interesting. And I think they did a really good job in the anime of adapting that in its own way and not having it be an exact copy of the manga character designs. Like, they're very close, but it is also adapted and makes works in the anime so well.
I'm relating to Fujimoto, like, you look at how they've spawned some incredible talents out of in manga, like when you look at the assistants that they've had, like, they've gone on to release, like, not just good, but, like, spectacular manga. Like, one of the assistants is the author for Hell's Paradise, which got animated and is getting a second season. One of them is the author of Spy Family.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, and get this, one of them is also the author of Dandadan. So, like, literally hit after hit after hit. Like, that's why I thought the part about when Fujino's on call and talking about the assistants, like, at first it sounds like she's, you know, just dogging them, but then you listen to what she's saying, so, like, she understands each of them so well, right? Like, she's like, he's fast, and like, you know, sometimes lacks the passion and, you know, the vision, but man, they really do put out fast work. Or, and this one's slow, but man, they're, you know, they're detail is always so great. Like, she sees it all, so I'm wondering if that's really tied in, because, again, like, you don't, it's not accidental when you see, you know, a prolific mangaka, you know, sprout spectacular assistants.
Yeah.
So,
right, because they have to, your assistants have to be basically on the same level, right? Like, because they have to produce
essence,
stuff.
And also, I feel like the good mangaka also act as mentors, like when the assistant's like, hey, you know, they should encourage them to go out and do their thing, right? And I mean,
right,
you know, again, you got three heavy hitters. I mean, Dandadan is quite possibly, you know, show of the year for me. Not to like, you know, get into Kenzoki territory, but, you know, phenomenal show. And I read the manga previously, and I love the manga. So, you know, and all of these also got manga to anime adaptations, which is like super rare to see.
And it's pretty fast too, like, for first series, like,
yeah. I mean, the turnarounds are pretty incredible. I think the longest turnaround was Hell's Paradise. It started in 2018, and the anime was last year in 2023. Spy Family was started in 2019 and got serialized in anime in 2022. Dandadan came out in 2021, and anime was released this year in 2024. So, like, 3-year turnarounds are super fast, I feel, for manga to anime. So, you know, just Fujimoto is like the god maker, apparently.
Yeah, that's the great thing about the system of manga there is that kind of apprenticeship structure, right?
Like, and it's so cool to see in the modern era, because I feel like for, I mean, obviously I fell off the wagon for a while, but I feel like for a long time I didn't see that. I mean, obviously, you know, the real old school ones, like, why am I blanking? One Piece author.
Oda?
Oda, yeah. Oda famously was one of Watsuki's best assistants.
Mm,
at the same time as
Hirokikaru Nobuo,
and then Hiroyuki Take, who's the Shaman King author. Like those, right. That was like back in like the early aughts, late 90s, right? But you know, that's cool to see it happen.
Wasn't Kishimoto of Naruto also wasn't Naruto's Kishimoto also a Watsuki assistant?
Possibly,
I think so. Like, it's crazy. But here, just off of that, like, here, a crazy thing, too, it makes me feel old, but Tatsuki, like, with all the stuff of producing all the mangas as super young, like, Tatsuki was born in, like, either 92 or 93.
Yeah, 10 years younger than me.
But the those assistants for that were assistants that went to do... Endo, who did Spy Family, and Yuji, who did Ayashimon and Hell's Paradise, they're older. Like Yuji was born in 84, and Tatsuya Endo, Spy Family, was born in 80. So they were all like,
wow,
like even there, they were like
journey.
10 years...
They were journeymen who then. Under Fujimoto were able to thrive, which is even more incredible to take people who were, you know, who obviously are in industry, but, you know, weren't able to get their breakout hit. And now they have, you know, genre defining works in today's era. So that's incredible. Like, I want to dive down this rabbit hole a bit more than just, you know, during a podcast, because that's really interesting to me. I knew Fujimoto spawned quite a few very, very prolific authors. I didn't realize it was like this much. The only one I knew of for fact was Tatsu, who's the Dandadan author. But
you kind of even see the influence, right, in some of these assistants.
You definitely can. I see less of it in Spy Family, I will say.
Yeah,
I think Hell's Paradise and Dandadan definitely feel like I can see where some of that influence came from, especially in certain art direction and kind of how certain characters are made, like very, very flawed characters as main characters, but still, like, they're cool, right? Like, they're all, you know, still likable. Like, Denji's possibly the most damaged and flawed main character outside of, like, you know, like, Guts, possibly, but...
Oh, man. Yeah. That's one of the things, I mean, we talked about this a little bit before, but the thing about Fujimoto's characters, like, Fujino in this one, he's very good, like you mentioned, about getting you to appreciate kind of basically jerks, people who you wouldn't like otherwise. And the thing that I like about Fujino in this one is that she's a braggart, and she's like the worst kind of braggart, right? She's not very good, but she thinks she is, at least, you know, in the beginning she isn't very good. She gets much better, right, through her partnership. But you see what's going underneath that, right? Like, what's going on in her head and how she's understands that she's not good, and then she kind of goes back and tries to make herself the person that she thought she was before. And while she's doing that, she's also like helping her friend, right, who becomes her friend I don't remember her name, Kiyomoto. Yeah, Kiyomoto. And I just think that is so great that, like, it's a special skill to, like, create an otherwise unlikable character and make them likable.
I think it's a very, it makes us so human, right? Because real humans aren't binary. We aren't just good or just bad. We all have good days and bad days. We all have qualities that suck about us, but also have things that make us redeemable. That's why we can have friends, even if we're not necessarily the best people in the world. And I think Fujino is an awesome, like, you know, example of that. Like, she is, yeah, everything you described. She brags, even though she's very mediocre, but she has this relentless desire to be the best and puts in the work, right? Like, you see the work she put in to get to where she was.
And I know lots of kids from, gosh, these days, when I count up, we have like 15 kids in our orbit from ages under a year to 15 years old. And frankly, thinking about it, like, most of them, when they're in like that, like 8 to 12 year range, they are huge braggarts with nothing to back it up. There's something, you know, they just want to be like, no, I'm the best. Like one of our friends, we were playing Super Smash Brothers, and he, you know, he's 8 and he wanted to play, but then he wanted to put on a bot to play for him, and he's like, it's got to be at least level 8. Should be level 9, should be like the top level bot. I'm at least that good. And we're like, it's not factual information, but it's such a realistic thing.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like Chunibyo is a thing for a reason.
Yeah.
Coming back off topic there, the manga that Fujino ends up drawing, Shark Kick, once again, it's a fabulous name of a manga. And that, I think that's one of the things I'm like, that feels like so much like a Chainsaw Man thing. Chainsaw Man should do that. Well, it's not. I didn't really know about it, and I'm gonna give it a read as much as I can. But before Chainsaw Man, Tatsuki did a 8-volume series, his first series called Fire Punch. So I'm like, Shark Kick, Fire Punch. Like, yeah, that's kind of he's doing a play on himself there, which is fine.
Man, the art. For just even some of the key art we saw, that I'd kill to see, like even just like a chapter of Shark Kick, just to see what it could be, I remember. Go ahead.
Sorry, with Shark Kick, on when you see, as I think you realize, you're shown that it's Kiyomoto's bookshelf, and Kiyomoto has like 3 or 4 copies of most of the volumes of Shark Kick. I'm trying to figure out why. Is it just like she just loves it and just wants to get another copy of the volume or one to share? Or is that like a thing that people do?
I think I wanted to go back and inspect, because there's certain, like there was that montage, right? And you're seeing like the weekly or monthly popularity polls, and you see when Shark Kick is like number 1 or number 2 or 3 with the medals. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if those correlate with the number of volumes purchased. Like when it got to number 1, she bought like a bunch of it or something.
I mean, I don't know how it works as a mangaka, but, and I don't know if maybe there is more to it, but sometimes you just get random numbers of volumes of stuff because this is what they have. I don't know if she actually bought those or not.
I guess that could be, because it wasn't Fujino's bookshelf, it was Kiyomoto's.
But these are Shark Kick, right? Can they work on those together?
She didn't work on it. No.
Shark Kick was all done by Fujino. Kiyomoto,
that's when
was already in, decided to go to art school.
They were given the opportunity to do the series, and then we had the second real, I'm so hot, so you better, if you follow with me, maybe you'll be okay.
Fujino basically not being honest with her, like herself, and being like, you know, I not telling Kiyomoto what she really felt, which is, you know, I can't, she doesn't feel confident in moving forward without her backgrounds, but she made it work, right? Just because almost again with her relentless need to prove that she can do it.
But then she was never satisfied with any of the assistants, right? She always just wanted Kiyomoto because she was perfect, right? They were the perfect combination.
That perfect pair. Which is interesting because I thought that's interesting that it was portrayed that way, because my understanding is that Fujimoto does everything, art and background. Maybe he has a shadow like assistant that does it, but my understanding was he did it all. Not that in my I don't know. I'm thinking back. I don't recall Chainsaw Man having like the greatest backgrounds, but I do think certain scenes definitely the backgrounds help.
I mean, so. I wouldn't read too much into it being like autobiographical.
True. I think it was more to make the story work. So I can see that again, because ultimately it was meant to be an interesting story versus being, you know, an autobiographical.
Yeah, although there's no doubt that he is in this. Like, that, I can almost positive that drive to create is in Fujimoto. Like,
gotta be, like, right?
Most mangaka, no, right? Like, you have to, because it's a brutal work environment.
Mm-hmm. And so, particularly to be someone who literally is, you know, has a multiple published things when he was like 13, which is crazy. It's insane.
Yeah. That's like a, even in like serialized manga, that's like a, like probably single digit percent of them actually manage to do that at such a young age. So,
yeah. Prodigy level for sure.
I think one of the things that, in reading the, I mean, the manga is great too. I highly recommend reading it. It was written and done as a single, basically a one-shot 143-page manga. That's how it was created. It was not created as a serialized thing and then condensed. Yeah, he did it while he was taking a hiatus after the end of part one of Chainsaw Man, where he kind of took 2 years off from Chainsaw Man and did a couple of these really cool one-shot things. So yeah, it was specifically written as a long-form single thing there. And I think one of the things that Fujimoto does better than nearly anyone is have like expressive backs and backs of people's heads and stuff. Mm-hmm. Where this, like, Look Back is so good at that, where you see the stuff and you see like the back of her head and saying things, and you can feel the expression coming out of it. And obviously, this discussion here is kind of back and forth between the anime and the manga and everything, which I think is totally fine. And the anime does a really great version at that, too.
The expressiveness of the, just the image, right? Telling the story with an image. The typical, right, like, masterful show, don't tell. I'm not adding a lot, but I mean, that is, like, such an important thing. I know we keep talking about this a lot, where if you can tell your story through just showing the images, like, it says a lot more. And that he can do that without even showing a face is, like, that's a real, real skill. Like, the whole time we're talking about this, I keep going back to the last scene of the movie with Fujino just hunched over her Cintiq, just going to work with the Yonkoma taped.
End credit roll, right? I thought that was such a cool way to do it.
Yeah, it's like brutally sad, but at the same time, it's like
the reality of what, like what she finds purpose in, right? Like, she's like, she can't stop because that's what Kiyomoto would have wanted her to continue doing. So, like, I think the last thing Kiyomoto would have wanted was for Fujino to stop because of her.
Yeah.
So I think that she realized that, and, you know, it's so interesting because, you know, it's the blank Yonkoma, right? But I'm wondering if in that, Fujino saw the Look Back Yonkoma, right? Where it's a characterization of her saving Kiyomoto, and then ends up with the thing in her back. Like, that was, you know, super comical. And the fact that that's the, you know, the source for the title is just, like, so hilarious to me. But I don't know, I think it was intentionally left to interpretation for the audience on how she internalized it, but it doesn't stop the fact that she decided that, you know, continuing that route. And to be fair, while the end credits does have her, you know, basically spending an entire day into night working on the Cintiq, they intentionally also have her walking away and out of the office at the end and turn off the lights.
Oh,
She does stop. Like, it doesn't just fade to black with her slaving it. So I do think that that's good kind of little subtle nod to be like, you know, it's a brutal work, but you still have to, you know, take your rest, because, I mean, you know, we've talked about it a few times on this podcast, right? Like, mangaka are not long-lived because that's a brutal work environment. I mean, you know, we lost Akira Toriyama, quite literally one of the, you know, was one of the living gods of the industry last year, or maybe 2 years ago now. I can't even remember anymore.
It was last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was last year.
He was not that old. He was, you know, in his late 50s.
65, I think.
Oh, okay. Mid 50s. Yeah. So.
But not.
Not old.
No.
Yeah, Tezuka wasn't that old either. It's kind of interesting that Leiji Matsumoto, of some of the old school mangaka, actually managed to outlive so many of the others.
That is interesting, yeah.
I wonder if it was his hat, or maybe he drew slightly less. I don't know how much he actually drew of manga, like how much time he actually just like sat there. I mean, his drawings are so crazy, but it's one of the things, I don't know if he ended spending more time being like a director.
Director,
or like a Yoshitaka Amano, who does more like illustration work, where it spends longer on a thing rather than trying to crank out stuff. I don't know. Mm. But the ending discussion there, I think the ending of the anime, whilst it's the same thing as in the manga, I think because of that different pacing stuff and the way that it feels so much more kind of hopeful than the ending of the manga. Because the ending of the manga is pretty much the same thing, except you don't get that extra little bit of sitting there and then maybe getting up, and it just ends kind of on this very bleak, like... Yeah, it has this very kind of bleak feeling to it, like, not quite, but like almost like a horror manga, got Venus in the Blind spot, Uzumaki, Junji Ito kind of thing, where it just kind of like, it just kind of like stops and you're like, well, I don't feel happy about that at all.
Yeah, it's... I mean, it was, I feel a lot of things in the end there, right? Like, I feel the kind of the emptiness of the loss, and let's, you know, the person's not going to come back. But also, like Nick says, she's got to move forward at the same time. And so she just kind of gets back to it, get back to work. She took that little bit of time off, and as a remembrance to her friend, like, you just keep pushing forward. Yeah, you know, I'm really looking forward to actually reading that. I didn't take the time to read it, but yeah, now I'm really excited to. I don't know why I didn't before. I'm just kind of compare them. We are coming up to the end here, so we'll have people give kind of final thoughts about things, favorite scenes, other observations. I just kind of go at it here. Dylan, it sounds like you have something to say, so why don't you go start things out?
Sure. Final thoughts. This is fabulous. I love it. My wife watched it. She's not anti stuff. She just doesn't watch a ton of things, and she watched it. She was like, yeah, that was really good. Having gone into it where I didn't know anything about it. Literally, I just knew that we were going to watch it. I was like, I know nothing about this at all. And it was...
the best way.
Yeah, and it was totally fabulous. I'd say probably my favorite scene that I'm kind of thinking of now, I'm having trouble remembering, it might have been before Fushino goes on her crazy jaunt of joy through the rain.
yes.
But it kind of, I think it's that, it might have actually been a different one, where she's walking and you see like the bottoms of her shoes as she's walking through stuff. And I could try and find it, but there's a scene in there where she's walking and you just kind of like, it's focused on like her bottoms of her feet and the bottom of her shoes, and it's done so great. And I think the whole thing of this anime is done in that same way that we say of the fabulous stuff of Satoshi Kon, which is that like everything was thought through and put a lot of care and effort into it. And it wasn't just, nothing was nothing was put in there for garbage or for filler.
And here that's on
anything.
Both ends.
Yeah, right, yeah, like both
the,
ends.
The manga and the anime, right?
Yeah, and they both do such a great job at adapting and pushing into the strengths of each other's mediums, such that they both end up being great in different things. So,
yeah. Mike, how about you?
Yeah, I liked that while it was sparing with its, you know, it tended to be fairly flat and slow paced, but then when it went dynamic, it really went for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that. And yeah, kind of with the con, I also liked the tightness of the script, that everything felt there for a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, definite recommend. Looking forward to reading the manga so I can compare, like, how that joy scene was handled, because I think in the interview the director had said that the manga used, like, a 2-page spread for it, and he obviously had to figure out how to do something very different that kept the impact.
Yeah, do you remember from that interview, I have a vague memory of that being almost a inspiring thing for the director to work on it. Was that bit how he, like, really wanted to animate it? Did I make that up?
I think he said that. He generally just said that he had to figure out a way to make it different, but still keep everything, and that if he couldn't figure out a way to do that right, then there was no point in animating it.
Mm-hmm.
And I did just share in one of the channels on the Discord, anyway, can find that image of the thing, and it is a 2-page spread, so if you look at it, that's literally all you get in the manga is that.
But it says so much, like that, again, just the way the body's contorted and how awkward and cringy it looks, like it's perfect.
But
right?
it goes from that out into this incredible sequence.
Right, and then I agree, the animated sequence was masterful. Probably one of the most, you know, I would say, visually, like, iconic scenes.
Yeah, I guess with that, Nick, how about you?
Well, yeah, I echo everything everybody said. In perfect use of an hour, I think it was, you know, paced perfectly. I will say I was disappointed at there would not being more, but I get why, because obviously, it has to end. But just animation was so stellar, like. I ended up doing a little bit of snooping during the recording, and Studio Durian actually has a website, and it looks like they actually contribute a lot of, like, art assets to bigger things. Like, they did art and original drawings for the Slam Dunk movie. They actually did creature designs for Chainsaw Man. So they've worked on some bigger stuff. Yeah, they have a cool website. And then, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's tied with Oshiyama, because they have, like, Oshiyama style stuff at the reference in as well. So it's probably just his, you know, independent studio, but does, you know, definitely out the work for multiple properties. So it kind of makes sense then that it, you know, it was chosen to do the actual full production of Look Back, because I'm assuming that they already had a good relationship with Fujimoto, since they did some stuff for Chainsaw Man. So that's my suspicion. But yeah, it was excellent.
There's a trust there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that you know exactly how to do my stuff. So, you know, let's do it. Let's do something cool. And then, you know, they got Amazon funding and off to the races. But awesome. I guess movie, if you can call it. I don't know. I mean, it's not really an OVA, so it got a full.
Yeah,
you know,
but it fits into that spot that would have been an OVA back in
for
the day.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's why I has big 90s feel. This feels like what a 90s era OVA used to be. Like, you know, 60 minutes, 75 minutes long, one shot, just really, really painstakingly animated, just looks really good, tight story, no need for more. Like, it's encapsulated perfectly in itself, doesn't need, you know, any more, any less. So I think that's why I was, this really kind of spoke to me, because, you know, again, 90s era OVAs really were, you know, the things that I that when I think of anime, those are like one of the first things I think of. So I got big, you know, 90s era OVA vibes from this. If that was the intent or not, who knows? But that's what I got out of it. So yeah, pretty great. Yeah, if it wasn't clear, this is instant recommend. I really hope it gets a physical release because I would love to.
Yeah.
But who knows? With Amazon, who knows?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I really want to buy a Blu-ray of this thing. I'll get it somehow. There's only, I mean, I just repeat all the things you guys said. I'll echo all that stuff. There's one scene that I wanted to point out. In addition to all the other ones that it's in when Fujino first goes over to Kiyomoto's house, and she sees the blank Yonkoma there, and she just can't help herself that she has to draw a Yonkoma. And that to me is like, this movie is, you know, this whatever is so much about, it's about a lot of things, but one thing, it's definitely an important part of it is like creative, being creative, and that creative process and like passion for things, like those kind of concepts. And that part there like really encapsulates it for me, just like that drive, like I need so bad to create these things that I can't help but create them, like, and that kind of runs through the whole movie, and I think that's really great. So like it, for anybody, you know, anybody who has like, you know, friendships, you can watch this movie and get something about friendship, right? If you're but if you're like a creative person, watch this movie and you'll click with it from that angle of like, oh, this is, I totally get this. This is what it feels like to me, is like, I have to create, and can't help it. Even if in the case of Fujino in the beginning, I suck at it, I still draw immense enjoyment from it. Right. And I drive to make myself better at it. So yeah. Super good. I can't wait to buy a Blu-ray of this thing, and then watch it again. So, that is all for our discussion of Look Back Today. And next time we meet, we will be discussing the 90s OVA Golden Boy. Very crass, but extremely well animated. We'll see if it's still funny.
I'm curious.
Yeah, I'll be curious because
we're all curious.
Last time I saw it, like in Anime Club, it just kind of is like the ecchi OVA that a female audience can also appreciate from my experience with it. Though at the same time, I've heard do not touch the original manga because it goes way more worse.
All right. Well, I'm not going to have to go seek that out now and see if I can compare and contrast the two. So go watch that. It's on Crunchyroll, all of it, surprisingly. I'm sure as a result of the whole Funimation purchase thing. All right. So that's all for this time. And with that, this is AMO Kenzoku signing off. Saraba.